So hi, I'm Johanna Draper Carlson of ComicsWorthReading.com, and this is Truth and Intimacy in Graphic Memoir, which I find a bit overwhelming a title.
What's the truth?
So we'll start. I'll project an example of each panelist's work and ask them to briefly describe the work of memoir that we'll be most recently talking about. So first, we have Dustin Harbin with Diary Comics.
Oh, and I need to explain that. No, yeah.
Just briefly describe your book.
I started doing Diary Comics in 2010, and the book collects very banal work from around that first time up to more serious stuff near the end, but it's mainly a daily diary format that skews an essay by the end.
Etienne Devadou, The Initiates, is the work that's best known in English.
The Initiates, sorry, my English is very poor. I prefer to tell it first. The Initiate is a kind of experience between a winemaker in my village and me, a comics maker. Mm-hmm. And I asked him to work with him during 1.5 years. And didn't pay me, but in exchange of my work, I obliged him to read comics because he didn't know anything about comics. Mm-hmm. And The Initiates is the tale of this experience.
And I loved it. It's a great book.
Thank you.
John Porcellino, we hope will be arriving later. And Raina Togemeyer with Sisters.
Yeah, so I started making memoir comics when I was 11 years old, but I didn't realize it. I just thought I was writing in my diary, and I illustrated my diary. And so I did that starting at age 11, did it all through college, high school, threw most of those diary comics away when I moved out of my mom's house because they were my diary, and I didn't want anyone to read them. But now I'm actually doing it professionally. I started doing a series of mini comics when I was in college called Takeout, and they were short stories mostly about my life at present time, but also sort of veering back into childhood. And then my book Smile, which came out in 2010, is my first long form autobiography, and it details the story of how I knocked out my two front permanent teeth when I was in middle school and had to go through a lot of dental drama to get them sort of rearranged and looking normal again. And I followed that up just recently with a book called Sisters, which is just kind of an exploration of my relationship with my younger sister through the lens of a road trip that my family took when I was 14.
Great, thank you very much. So to start with the premise of the panel, how true are your books?
I guess I'll start because I'm on this end. I say that they're 90% true. There are sometimes details in the stories that I edit, fudge, combine, or otherwise alter in order to service the story, but I like to tell people that the emotions in the book are 100% true, because it usually comes down to, you know, what the character is feeling at the time, so I try to keep that as true as possible.
Mine are mainly true, and the things I leave out, the falsenesses, are either to respect the privacy of people involved, or things that I don't find constructive to whatever I'm trying to say. For instance, like, I wouldn't mention having sex or something like that. It'd just be a distraction. But then in the later ones, I started using more metaphor when I have things happen that clearly weren't, like, characters or myself, like floating off, or things happening that were much more metaphorical and not true in a accepted a figurative sense. So I'm going to give myself a true score of 80%.
In this book, every word, every picture is true. I didn't imagine anything else than what is true, but it's 18 months work. This book, you can read it in 2 or 3 hours. So,
right.
What is wrong is the time, because I had to contract the story, and to my book is not 18 months reading time. You know? that's what is not true.
So how do you select what events to portray and what not to portray?
That's my instinct, I think. I spend a lot of days and hours to work in the vineyard with Richard Lorva, the winemaker. So there was a long time without anything else than work. It's difficult. It's more difficult physically than comic book. and sometimes some days are not useful for my book. But I think they are important because it's time with him to speak and to waste time. And it's the only way for me to catch good information. It's to have a long time with the characters.
I literally just spaced on what the question was.
How do you decide what to include and what to exclude?
I was literally opening my mouth to force air out, and then I was like, oh, wait. I have a weird thing because when I started mine, they were real dumb. Like, they were just like very banal things that would happen during the day or watching television or something. So there was not enough selection. And then the ones that I quite like now or am more proud of, there was quite a lot of selection. I was leaving a lot of banal stuff out and selecting. And so then that selection process became what was exciting about making those comics. Figuring out the value of those moments as opposed to just throwing moments out willy-nilly. How would be what's worth retelling to another person as opposed to just talking about yourself all day, like... You know what I mean?
Talking about yourself all day, I don't know what that's like at all.
Yeah, yeah. like sitting in front of literally an audience speaking to a microphone about
yourself.
Exactly.
I mean, when I was doing a daily journal, I wasn't doing any editing. And then when I was in college and writing short story form autobio, I was just kind of like, oh, a thing that happened to me that was funny. Like Dustin said, you know, stuff you would probably retell to a friend. Like, and then going back further in time, because I'm writing mostly right now memoir about my childhood, I think I'm just looking for the sticky memories. Like, oh, there was that thing that happened. And just trying to latch on to those really sticky memories that have more of a story to them than just this thing happened and then it ended. But there's plenty of editing. There's plenty of leaving stuff out. And in my case, it's just in service of the story. I think I try, before I even begin the story, to think about, you know, what the themes are and what the beginning, middle, and end is going to be and what I really want to say with it. And I have years and years to select from in that sense. But it is instinct. It really is just kind of, I don't know.
There are things, too, where you... Like, if you're saying something, like, say you're a trip with your family and you're 14 years old, there's only a certain amount of setup that needs because
that's
it's
true.
A pretty common experience. Mm-hmm. So, like, you would probably not waste half the book going, let me explain what a trip is. Let me explain what being 14 is. Like, that's kind of the power of autobiographical things. Mm-hmm. It's like a common human experience. Like, oh, I've done that. I've been 14. I've gone on a trip. Mm-hmm. So the thing you would select to include would be what made that trip different, or why it's still resonant, or why it might be resonant to the reader, which is the best part of doing that kind of comic, I think. Selecting the, not the 18 months, but the 3 hours worth of reading.
Yes.
And yet, one of the things that impressed me most about Etienne's book was it was such a foreign experience to most people. Many people do not think about what goes into making wine.
Yeah.
And the time and the care involved. So do you think that's a little bit different? Touching on the theme of universality or how people can sympathize with it, can you talk about that a little bit?
Before to start this book, I suppose that to make a wine and to make a book it's the same adventure. Mm-hmm. You know? It's a long work. You cannot know when you begin what will be the finished result. Mm-hmm. You can do a book or a wine as just a technical product, you know, it's possible. But this winemaker was interesting for me because he has a very high idea of what must be a bottle of wine and what must be is the way he lives with the vineyard, with the ground, with the meteo. And that's a kind of experience similar that maybe we have to make our books. That's why I wanted to pass so long time with him.
Which leads into my next question, which is, how have people portrayed in your books reacted? This might be more dangerous for somebody like Dustin who's making diary comics, but have you had good reactions, bad reactions? Does working with real live other people affect what you do?
The first thing Richard told me is, hey, I'm not so fat.
He thought you made him too fat?
Sorry?
He thought that you made him too fat?
Yeah.
In my earlier ones, a lot of my comics feature a girl who at the time was wooing and then dating, and we dated for a number of years and have now separated very amicably, but at the beginning I would draw, there's a visual trope of drawing, especially like a Mad Magazine thing, drawing a woman's breasts is just these like two triangles. Like it's almost like a letter form, boop, boop. Mm-hmm. And I did that because I remember it from like being a little kid. And she's like, why did you make my breasts like these saggy little triangles? And I was like, well, that's just like a shorthand. The comic is not about what your breasts look like. And she's like, and she would complain about it to our friends, like especially other women. It's like, can you believe he makes my breasts look like these saggy little triangles? And they'd be like, you should learn how to draw breasts. You should need anyone. I was like, guys, that's not the point, guys. I also got in trouble, though, when I would deal with relationship stuff in there, especially when it was a little dire, like maybe if I was going through things that I was working on the page and would not realize how they would come off to her. Because I'm pretty solitary, so it wouldn't be like, I'm about to share this comic, or I'm about to publish this, or I'm about to post this online. And it's raw in a certain way that isn't the things that I've considered about you. What my image of being considerate is not in line with what you need in terms of consideration, which I got in trouble for rightly. It was a lesson because I was like, but I did this and I did this. She's like, no, I don't care. That's not. I still feel this way. So you did it wrong. That's troubling. But it also is maybe part of that process. You're going to deal with that kind of stuff, that might have to happen. Or else you're not going to make anything particularly good if you're like, well, I can't say this. I can't say this. So maybe I just won't say anything. I'll just make comics about sandwiches.
So do you feel like you sacrificed your relationship to the comic?
Mm-mm. No. Maybe in a broad sense, where being an internal, more solitary than I appear at cons guy, working on comics, working on drawings, that might be, the thing. But like the actual talking about it was more like it's more like an offense, like just a minute offense, not a long-term thing.
There's a line at the end of your fourth mini comic. I'm not sure where in the actual book it appears, where you say, "Well, what about all the times when I say I love you?" And the girl character says, "Well, that's nice for that girl on the page, but that's not me."
Right. Yeah.
And I found that really powerful in reminding us that. This is your version
right,
of
exactly.
life. This is not true life.
Yeah.
This is your version of
life. It's kind of like you pose these cardboard cutouts. You work on the character design of these cardboard cutouts. You're going to pose through there. And they're people you know. And you're kind of cartooning them up, too, to make them interesting. And then you walk them around in this little, what do you call it?
The diorama.
Yeah, thank you, the diorama. And then you start interacting with them in the same way that you should be interacting with the humans. Yeah, when she said that, that was straight up real what happened. I was like backwards in the chair, all that.
Alec Longstreth. Let's talk about Alec Longstreth. Once said that he had a girl break up with him and say to him, "Comics will never love you back." But that's not true.
That is terrible. Oh, my God.
He chose comics.
Might as well have just kicked him in the nuts, face, and stomach at the same time.
He made a comic about it, too. It's great. I think the deeper...
I'll show her.
No, seriously, it's like a call to arms. I think the deeper we get into that really gritty stuff, the better our comics turn out. So yeah. Sometimes it's super tempting to put really personal, intimate stuff on the page. But I think part of the editing is just drawing back and trying to think about how the reader is going to perceive it. But yes, also the people that you're portraying. Yeah. I didn't think about that at all when I started. And I wrote Smile and talked about all these like really bad friends that I had in middle school. And I was doing it with the lens of 20 years between me and these things. But a lot of them had sort of come back into my life via Facebook. And some of them read the book and were like, oh, huh, okay. And a couple of them like stopped talking to me after that. But I was like, this is stuff we did when we were 14. Like, I don't hold you as an adult to the things you said to me when we were kids. But in one case, I had a friendship that went very sour when I was in middle school. The girl ended up kind of apologizing to me after reading my comics. Actually, I think it's because her kids really liked my comics, and so she kind of had to be like, oh, yeah, mommy doesn't feel proud of the way that she treated her friends when she was your age, kids.
Did her kids know that that was her in the comic?
I don't know, because I changed her name.
Okay.
I didn't change all of the names in my stories, but I did change a few. But it was very clear that it was her. And more recently, my book, Sisters, I mean, it's about my troublesome relationship with my troublesome little sister, and this is a human being who was born with a lot of anxiety problems, and she's got a lot of, you know, things that she didn't get treated for until she was an adult, and what we saw was just that she was a grouchy child. She was a grumpy kid. We didn't understand her, and she didn't understand any of us. She was just really angry all the time. So I made a point to show her the script for Sisters before I showed it to anybody else. My editor hadn't seen it. My husband hadn't seen it. Nobody had seen it. I said, Amara, if you don't feel comfortable with me putting all this out there, I'm not going to do it. And now I feel like I sort of have that responsibility to the people that I'm going to be writing about, because it turns out there's a lot of people reading my books. And I didn't think about that when I started Smile. Nobody was reading my books.
What if I succeed? I'll worry about that later.
Exactly. That's what happened. And now it's... Gosh, now people want to, you know, ask me all kinds of questions about these people in real life, and the divide between like my real life and the real life that I depict in my books is getting to be a little bit farther now. But I feel like that's not good. I'm not doing my best work if that's the case.
You know what's interesting about that is if you showed that script to your sister, not only is there a permissive thing going on where you're like, is this okay? Because you're not my enemy. I'm not trying to vilify you. But also she could say, this is how I saw this at that time. Like,
right.
Here's some perspective that you, because you were just walking around in your computer.
Yeah.
And I had my own brand computer that was looked at all this data in a different way, which might make a stronger work, you know, having that communication.
And I want to invite the people I depict in my stories to also tell their stories, but my sister doesn't make comics, and she's sort of a private person, so she has no interest in telling her side of the story, so I feel, again, the responsibility to respect that.
Right, right.
Keep it... She's my sister. You know, I don't want her not on my team.
Right.
It's complicated.
So why did you start doing graphic memoir?
When I started, my first book, which is a graphic memoir, is at the end of the last century, I suppose. But it was just a story about a project of a highway. Crossing a farm and destroying houses of people, and I try to tell what happened to those people. This book is not translated in English, sorry. And I did another book, which is Les Mauvaises Gens, Bad People, in English, and it's a kind of portrait of the place where I lived when I was a child, in blue collar, poor people in the west of France. So that's my two first books in this kind of book.
Why that choice? Why non-fiction comics?
But I do also fiction comics.
Yes,
I try to alternate fiction and non-fiction. But my fictions are also very realistic. I use the material, narrative material I use is only things of people around me. Often it's my village, my friends, but I transform them, of course. So that is fiction. But there is not so much difference between fiction and no fiction for me. So I try to alternate fiction and non-fiction, because I enjoy to make both.
I think for me, like, turning to that kind of thing was not nearly as interesting as Etienne's reading. It was more as practice at first. So it'd be like, oh, if I'm going to do, I'll do, like, just a little comic each day about some dumb thing. And it's excellent practice, if nothing else, even if you make a terrible comic. It's like practicing guitar, playing scales. You would never record it and play it for your friends. Like, check it out, I'm playing guitar, super well, do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And then it turned into just more of a habit, and then I started figuring out how to make it more valuable to me and to whoever's reading it. But I also struggle with that because I feel like it's an autobiographical story is the easiest story. It's the one you have to work the least hard to kind of apprehend. It's right, you literally have looked, let's see, what do I want to talk about? What about me? Okay, that works. You know, it's not, I think it could be really powerful, but it can also be a little stunting, which is the thing I struggle with now where I'm working on other stuff that's not, and it's, the muscles are so different, and it's much more of a challenge to, like, figure out how to make another thing compelling that you're not in the middle of.
Yeah, I'm not, forgive me if I'm missing something, but I'm not aware of any sort of self-done fiction work you've done. I know you've contributed.
Yeah, just gag strips and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I know you've contributed elsewhere. But
I'm getting ready. I'm working on a bunch of Paul Bunyan, like long retellings of Paul Bunyan things in comics. So it's like the opposite of emo, autobiographical. Like, oh man, I'm so sad today, guys. You know, it's like literally the exact opposite. So it's very challenging to shift gears like that. I mean, it's enjoyable. It's an enjoyable challenge, but still.
I think I just don't have an imagination. Like, people are like, why don't you draw something with dragons? And I'm like, because I don't know what a dragon looks like. I can't look at one and draw it. Like,
just Google it. There's photographs all over the place of dragons.
Yeah, but that's someone else's vision. Anyway, I just don't have, like, a creative imagination in that sense. I have a very vivid imagination for what I should have said that one time. And what I did say and why it bothers me, but I don't know, it's probably just that I'm self-centered and really enjoy, like, my own stories. But I mean, it's just like a storytelling thing, like something silly happened to me and I want to tell people about it. It just comes from that. And I was also just a really shy person when I was young, so I think, like, I would have liked to tell stories when I was younger, but I didn't have a medium for it, and so figuring out that I could do it through comics was kind of exciting.
Well, and yet you've done drama is fiction.
I have done fiction, yeah. And the book I'm working on now is, like, pure fiction. Drama was, it was fiction with quotes around the word fiction because I just took, like, my own high school memories and re-envisioned them with middle school kids with different names. So, yeah. That was fun.
Okay. Well, and we have joining us,
yay,
John Porcellino. If you could...
I'm very sorry. There was a great deal of confusion happening about 20 minutes ago.
That's okay. I was wondering if you could briefly describe your most recent book, Hospital Suite, since that's how we started.
I draw an autobiographical comic series called King Cat, and the new book of mine, it's actually the first book I've done that's not, usually I just publish my comics in a self-published form in King Cat, and then I work with Drawn Quarterly to do collections of that work, and so this was actually the first book of mine that was all new stuff that I hadn't previously self-published, and it's kind of in the late 90s, and then for maybe the next 10 or 12 years, I went through a long series of pretty severe health crises and mental health crises and things like that. And So I'm an autobiographical cartoonist, so I was writing about this stuff in my comics in King Cat, but in a kind of very oblique way. Like there'd be little passing references that maybe you wouldn't even necessarily understand unless you knew more intimately what was going on in my life. And to a certain extent, it was because I didn't know how to tell the story of what was happening to me while I was in the middle of it. You know, I didn't know where this was going or how things were going to work out. And so those comics were published in a book called Map My Heart a few years back. And when I did the book tour for that, I talked about the context of these comics when I was talking to groups. And and health issues are a difficult thing for a lot of people to talk about. There's a lot of weirdness about it, and especially mental health issues. And so, I've had a number of different problems, but it kind of in the aftermath of this, like, really drawn out, really severe health scare, I developed, like, full-blown obsessive compulsive disorder. And so, I started talking to these groups about it when I would be on the book tour, and almost inevitably at every event, someone would come up to me afterwards and say, like, thank you for talking about that, because, you know, either I suffer from this problem or, you know, somebody in my family or, you know, a friend. And I realized that there was a need to be open about this stuff. And part of the reason also in my comics that I didn't really refer to it, those problems as directly, was because, especially with OCD stuff, I was so ashamed. I was like embarrassed that I had this problem. And once I started talking about it openly, it kind of broke that spell. And I also saw the desire from other people out there to have a conversation about this stuff. And so I knew that I wanted to tackle this period in my life in a comics form. And I guess I finally, about that time, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, is when I felt like I kind of was coming out the other side of it. I was starting to, you know, feel better. My brain was working better. And I just felt like it was time for me to approach it. And so in some ways, the hospital suite book is like, it's kind of like the other side of the coin to Map My Heart, where Map My Heart was written during this time period, but only, in very oblique, kind of reflective, poetic ways that were kind of vague. In the hospital, with the hospital suite, my intention or my hope was just to lay it out, the nitty-gritty, like, this is what happened to me, this is how I dealt with it, you know, this is the story of this crazy time in my life. And so, you know, in some ways I feel like those two books are kind of bookends of that time in my life, and they're just two different approaches in comics form to writing about those experiences.
What is the most difficult thing about making a graphic memoir?
For me, it's just because I'm specifically working with a time frame in my life that's approximately age 8 to 14, and that's because my publisher is Scholastic, and they are a children's book publisher, and they don't really do stuff for babies, and they don't really do stuff for people older than teenagers. I'm running out of things that happened to me between the ages of 8 and 14, and I'm now being asked to do more. They've had a lot of success with my books, and they've said, okay, we want you to keep doing this, and it's just like, how many times do I have to drudge up these awful times in these years of my life? That's a very specific challenge, but writing Sisters, I feel like I really kind of drug myself through some stuff I would rather not think about all the time. And then when you go on book tour, people want to talk to you about it, and they want to ask you over and over again to describe the pain. and, you know, it's cathartic to put it on the page, but sometimes then you want to close the last page and be like, it's out, it's done, now it's yours, now you can have it. Putting yourself out there is hard. It's super rewarding. I think what John just said applies a lot to what I did with Smile, which is just to take this really specific sort of medical experience and describe it to people. And then a lot of the feedback for me was, I understand, and I've been through something similar, and I didn't realize anybody else had gone through this. And so that connection that you make with people as a result is super rewarding. But again, now I get to listen to people explain to me their own dental dramas in graphic detail, and I'm like, this is,
so, we had those conversations.
Yeah, Dustin and I met because he...
I also busted my teeth out as a kid.
And he made a comic about it, and I was like, wow, cool.
Yeah. Her story is so much...
Yours is pretty bad.
It's like if I broke my arm, I was like, God, my arm's broken. And then Raina walks in missing an arm. And she's like, yeah, mine just got chopped off. It's okay, though. Your story's interesting, too. I've been having a struggle lately in that because the way I started doing these was very dumb and just practice, like a daily practice, and then ended with being, to me, more valuable and working things out on the page as I was doing it. So now I'm in a point where I want to decide, I'm making diary strips again, but I'm trying to be very careful about what I want to say. Mm-hmm. Not to misspeak, but I want what I say to have value, as opposed to just being like, today I watched television again. Or today I met a pretty girl and I talked to her. Like something that where there's a voice behind it and there's both value to me and like, like one of the good things about working things out, and maybe John had a similar experience, is like as you're, because comics is communicative, you're figuring out how to say this to another person, and the other person is invisible. It could be any person. And so it has to be both broad enough for them to get, but vague enough for them to value the getting, and also be valuable to you as the artist to say it. And finding that balance for me now has been really a struggle, and it often ends in me not making a comic. I'll just be like, no, maybe this is not what I want to say. So I have like a this like graveyard of, my strip's only about this big, and my drawing table is littered with like half drawn, you know, you can see it gets to panel 3. 1, okay, that's good, okay, good. And then the pencil line just dribbles off because I've lost interest in what I'm talking
about. Do you write as you go? Like, do you write 1 panel, 2 panel, 3 panels, and then realize you don't know where you're going with it? Or do you kind of sketch things out ahead of time? And
I have a, I make little teeny scripts in my sketchbook, so it'll be like a...
It's made of wood.
It's the cover.
It's so cool.
A friend of mine's a bookmaker, she makes. So I'll make like this. Like, I'll just make little beats. You guys can't see it, but it's just like little...
They're seriously thumbnails. They're like a half inch big.
But it's like, I'll say this, and then this happens, and then I'll work out the way to visualize it. But then, like, the third panel, I'll just be like, I don't give a shit about this.
I did. So why would anybody else?
Panel 1, panel 2, I'm good. Panel 3, panel 4, blank. So that's been hard for me lately.
Well, the most difficult thing for me is to make coexist two opposite things, I think. The first one is that the people that I want to draw, how to say that? I don't want only make a book about these people. I want to make the book with them. So before publication, they read all the pages, and we have to find to agree on everything in the page where I drew him. You understand me? And so it's a long work. And the second thing is that I am the chief. That's my book. So I tell what I want. And it's opposite. It's a long negotiations sometimes, but I have to keep the direction of the book. At the same time, I have to respect people that trust me to give me a part of their life that I give to invisible persons. We will read the book, and that's the most important and the most difficult for me.
So, did the winemaker in this book? Was there anything you took out because of his reaction?
In this book, no.
Okay.
But it was long negotiations.
Okay.
Because he didn't know what will. For him, it was difficult to imagine what will be the effect to the people reading the book about his job, about his way of work. He didn't read comics before this book, so he doesn't know anything about comics, anything about the reaction of people reading the book. So I had only to be persuasive, and sometimes in some seconds he think he is ridiculous, but in other seconds I am ridiculous. So 1 point for him, 1 point for me. Okay, that's the kind of negotiation we had.
Did this book help his business?
No, he didn't want. He is a very ethic person. And one of the conditions to make this book is that he will never, he told me, he doesn't want to sell one bottle because of the book. So it was not very difficult for him because it's a little, he has a little vineyard, and before the book he has not any difficulties to sell his production. What he didn't know, and what I didn't know neither, is that in France this book is a very big success. And a lot of people read the book, finish the book, and say, "No, I want to drink the wine." And they look on computers, they find his address, and his phone ring anytime, 50, 100 times every day when the book was published. So it was a problem for him. But there is no commercial difference for him before and after the book.
I had a similar thing with that. Did you read that Christophe Blaine? Alain Passard, book, where after reading the book, which isn't my favorite Christophe Blaine book because it's essentially like recipes and it's not much of a story, but I wanted to go powerfully to that restaurant and just, or just to the garden, just eat his like radishes.
It's the same situation.
It's like I just want. Man,
but in a restaurant, really, there is always some place.
What's the most difficult part about it? I don't know, I think probably most people have said it already. I guess it's trying to find that weird line that I don't think you can really put your finger on between telling a really personal, individual story in a universal way so that the readers can enter that story. I wish I knew what the secret to that was, because it would be very valuable. But it's to me, it's mostly been intuitive. You know, I'll have some idea for a story. Sometimes something will happen, and I'll think, "Oh, this would be a great comic," you know. And I'll start to work on it, and it just doesn't work. File it away or something. Maybe a year later or 5 years later, I'll come back to this thing, and all of a sudden, the way to tell the story is clear. So, and I feel funny saying it's difficult because I don't really exert that much energy on it. I try to let the things come naturally. You know, I don't try to force them. Like, you know, I've got to figure out how to do this story. So, you know, like the hospital suite, you know. When I got out of the hospital in 1997, I immediately sat down with a notebook and I wrote out everything I could remember about it, because I was like, at some point I'm going to, if I'm assuming I survived this whole horrible thing, I'm going to want to write about it, I'm going to want to remember. So, you know, I drew little calendars, like, this is the day I went in, this is the day I got out, this is the day I did this, so that I would have that reference. But, you know, again, like I said, it took 20 years, or 15 years or so, just to get to the point in my life where I was, where I, as a person, where I could tell that story, where I was like, okay, I can see how to make this into a story that I can tell to people. And so oftentimes my comics are that way. You know, it's, you have this impulse, but it just doesn't really coalesce. And so, again, I don't know that it's difficult, because I've kind of learned not to force it. I just let it be. If it doesn't go where it wants to go, it doesn't feel right, I just kind of put it on the back burner and let it percolate a little bit in my head for however long. But I think the point of that process is the difficulty of finding that way to tell, to combine something that's very individual with something that's very universal. And like Dustin said, to me, my whole purpose in making comics is to connect with people, to communicate, and not just one way, but to communicate and get communication in return, to have connection with people. You know, like he said, I was always really shy or felt awkward, and I, you know, through sitting down and writing and drawing, I found a way to, I think, communicate with people that I could do, that didn't give me, you know, that I felt more comfortable to me. And it's still true, you know, that's really why I do it, because I want to connect with people in some way. And but to connect, you know, obviously, if you just write the most navel-gazing, you know, self-obsessed stuff, it's not going to get you too far. You need to find a way to write about life that draws people in and allows them then to examine their own life through that new lens that you've provided as an artist. But vice versa, I feel it's important for me personally to get the response from people, and it's like a dialogue between the reader and the writer.
I have a question for you guys. Do you find that people respond more to sad and traumatic stories than they do to happy stories?
Well, I think there's a certain angst to it, where if you have a very difficult thing, that's probably the time as a human being where you need the most help from people. You need the most connection to people. You know, when you're all pissed out and dancing down the street, it doesn't care what, you know. But when you go through this difficult time, that's when people need to reach out, you know, or have some connection. So it may be true. But I do think, I mean, I think people like to see the hope involved too in the story that is about something pleasant, I think. But you probably are right in that way, that the difficult stories people really can sink their teeth into, because it's something you need as a human to feel that you're not alone in this.
But I think you said something that touched off something in me too, which is that people do like a little hopeful uptick at the end of a story, and if they don't get it, they're like, but just
in a funny way, with the hospital suite, it's like, well, you know, what is this story going to be if I just get sicker and sicker?
Right.
You know, who wants to read that?
They're unfinished, they're masterwork.
Right. That's right. That's the last page.
You just trail off at the end.
You know, so I'm not a cartoonist who necessarily wants to have a happy ending all the time. I will oftentimes leave my comics just hanging with no ending, because that's what life is like.
That's what life is like.
But I felt with this story, it's like, I, you know, this was a story, you can't leave it hanging. Like, it needed to have some kind of resolution. And it just took all those years to get to that point in my life where, even though it is somewhat unresolved, I could tell the story in a way that kind of brings it around to something that feels whole.
I think there's a shared humanity, too, in seeing someone's, like, weaknesses or their moments of crises or their moments of frailty. Like, did you guys ever read Chris Ware's those sketchbooks that John and Corley put out? And because Chris Ware is such a extraordinarily like decanted, like his pages are like these beautiful you know, crystals that he's manufactured, and then his little sketchbook comics are just about him feeling awful or hating himself, or and to a degree that is shocking because he's so vaunted. And I remember reading those, and there's something about admiring someone's work and then saying, oh, they have to go to the bathroom every day like I do. And
yes.
You know, they smell sometimes. But they're rude to their spouse, or they're, you know, they're human, fallible, dumb animals, just like I am. And there's an easy connection there that I think is that can be pretty resonant. But also maybe it's kind of like drawing fan art on Tumblr or something. Like, you can work and make a beautiful piece of art that you struggled over and then post it in front of a certain audience, and it's just like tumbleweeds. And then you could draw Batman sitting on a chair, you know, like it might be a little easy to get a reaction sometimes. For me, I worry about that because I often will reveal something and then get a lot of praise for it, and I'll be like, well, I feel weird accepting praise for saying I'm sad, you know what I mean? It's like it's an odd feeling for like applause to break out,
right,
when you're talking about like a moment that you're not proud of or a mistake that you made. It's an odd feeling.
Are there particular artists that have influenced you in working in graphic memoir?
I can start, I think.
I mean,
John Porcellino.
If I'm honest about it, I mean, I think, you know, perhaps maybe like Linda Barry, her early stuff, which was not necessarily memoir, but it was written in such a way, first person, or it had such a, the characters were so rich, you know, they seemed real. But for me, I just was always interested in life, like real life, and to the point where, like, when I was doing, I mean, you know, there are people who have done autobiographical forever, but you know, I was doing this stuff, and I tried to avoid any kind of, you know, when I first started doing Keep Cap, people would say, well, yeah, have you read American Splendor? You really need to check this out, because this guy is just kind of writing about nothing, you know, nothing happens, and I consciously for years and years avoided reading any of that, because I didn't want it to possibly taint what I was doing, the way I thought about my work, and I remember when Chester Brown switched over to autobiography, and I was just like, that's done now. It's just, you know.
That would be mine as well. Like, Chester Brown for me is like the, Yummy Fur issues with autobio in them, or like, what's the name of the story? Responding to Helder, or whatever. You remember that one? That was like he wrote a story about, like someone that lived in his, maybe it was a rooming house, and then there were repercussions, so he did another story about the repercussions. I remember just being like, this guy is firing all cylinders, and feeling like it was really powerful and valuable and odd too, like his humanity. And Chester Brown's an odd, the best way, but an odd fellow. And like I remember being, the first comics that I read that made me want to make comics were Chester Brown comics, and especially his autobiography. Because it feels valuable, like, it feels like he's struggling in his odd way with the life of the world and his mother and, you know, all these different things going on.
I guess I've always liked memoir, I've always liked documentaries, I've always liked sort of the, like, behind the curtain of my favorite, like, I liked Beverly Cleary's books when I was a kid, but then I read, like, her memoir, and I was like, this is great, she grew up in a farmhouse, like, I thought that was fabulous. I liked Little House on the Prairie, like, just all of it. And then I read K.G. Nakazawa's Barefoot Gen when I was 10, which is his kind of retelling of what it was like to experience the bombing of Hiroshima in World War II. And, I mean, it just, like, hit me harder than any other thing had ever hit me at that point in my life. But I also grew up with For Better or For Worse, which wasn't memoir exactly, but it was sort of like 1 degree or 2 degrees shy of being memoir. And reading that every day from the time I was a kid until I was an adult was kind of really informative to what I ended up doing. And, I mean, James Kochalka had a huge influence on me with American Elf, and just I felt like he was also somebody who was putting, like, warts and all on the page in a way that I would never do. I would never want to depict my life in present with that many appendages hanging out, I guess. But I still got really obsessed with it and really felt like, I mean, I didn't know James at all, but I felt like he was somebody I knew very, very well. In some ways, he taught me what not to do, but I also got a lot out of reading his comics.
At the end of the 19th, I read the book of Joe Sacco.
Yeah, that's good.
The first book I read were in English, and we could find them in a little bookshop in Paris. There was only in France one bookshop where we could find his book. And after, his book were translated in French. And for me, it was very important, impressive. And he is one of the most important authors who gave me the, how do you say? Well, after to read the book, I wanted to try to do that. Mm-hmm. There is another French author, which is Emmanuel Guibert, the photographer. Maybe it's translated from in English, I suppose.
Yes.
One of my influence is not in comics books, is in radio, a French radio broadcast journalist, which the name is Daniel Mermet, and he, every day during 1 hour, he was telling an human experience, a worker, a politician, a writer, and it was very interesting for me because I think the radio is generating some images. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you draw audio, it's some image. And I tell me, if we can do that in the radio, maybe we can do that in comics.
All right, and that'll have to be the end. Thank you all very much for coming. Thank you to our audience for coming.